Welcome to Supervision Simplified, the podcast that's here to rock your supervisory world. Our mission is simple yet powerful: to educate and elevate counselors, social workers, and psychologists, empowering them to serve their communities at the highest level of fidelity and service. I'm Dr. Amy Parks. I'm a child and teen psychologist, a group practice owner, and a supervisor in Virginia.
And I'm Valerie Harris, a trauma and attachment specialist, group practice owner, and a supervisor in Tennessee. Let's make it simple and dive right in.
Welcome to Supervision Simplified. I am Dr. Amy Parks.
And I'm Valerie Harris.
We're so excited to have you here today. And we're also so excited to welcome our dear friend, Jackie Flynn, here with us from Florida tonight. Jackie, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Oh, thanks for asking me. This is such an honor. I love both of you.
Oh, we love you so much too. We're so happy to have you. It's really a privilege for us. Thank you so much.
Yes, we're excited.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, Jackie? Because not everyone knows you. They should all know you, but not everybody knows you. We want everyone to know all about you.
Well, my name is Jackie Flynn. I'm a licensed mental health counselor here in Florida, and I'm a supervisor for interns and people that just need some support. And also, I'm a registered play therapist supervisor and a certified EMDR therapist and consultant, and just friends of Amy and Val, which is so super important, and a private practitioner that has a small clinical practice here in Central Florida and Cocoa Beach, working with all ages. But I love using play as a therapy. So one of the things that I specialize in is my trauma work with children. But I use play therapy across the lifespan. So I do, you know, some speaking events. I'm getting ready to, do some teaching. I teach some courses to some play therapists, things of that nature.
You do a ton of speaking and a ton of teaching, but how did you start your journey? So did you start your journey as a therapist in this sort of play therapy world and understanding it from sort of this EMDR perspective? Or did you start sort of the traditional route like we all did?
I started as a school counselor, and I realized that all the meetings, I have ADHD, so paperwork's not my favorite thing in the world, or meetings. I was in the meetings all fidgety and everything. Ironically, I was the one scheduling them, and it just wasn't my jam, although I do have great respect for school counselors and teachers, like immense. It's a challenging position, but I decided to move into the world of therapy, and I'm a vet, an Army vet, so I have just a real big place in my heart for veterans and PTSD, so I decided to get trained in EMDR, and my specialty is with children, so I wanted to be a play therapist too, and then naturally, I just merged the two, and that's one of the things that I love is EMDR and play therapy integrated regardless of age. I love using play therapy with a lot of adults. They didn't play as a child. So a lot of those child parts are still kind of suffering from whatever it was that happened to them or what didn't happen that needed to happen. And play can really heal that like nothing else.
Oh, I love how you said that. What didn't happen. You know, oftentimes like in trauma work, people think about what happened to you and they often forget that it's also what didn't happen and should have. And so I know just from you and I connecting in the past, that's one of the things you've helped me with immensely. And, you know, I'm curious, you know, I know they touch on it in grad school and different things like that, but I'm kind of curious about, you know, have you noticed anything when you look at different clinicians, like where some are drawn more towards that and some are not? I'm just curious if you found anything that sticks out to you about the types of clinicians that really gravitate towards play therapy versus those who may not want to get near it. because I'm just curious about that.
Well, what I've noticed, and specifically a t-shirt is coming to mind that in the play therapy world, it's real common. It'll have just a regular person, like a stick person on one side. And on the other side, there's this person like dressed like a unicorn and dancing. It's like regular therapist and then a play therapist. So usually it's people that like to play and they're very creative and very much into working with children and adolescents. And just kind of overall, it seems to be like open-minded and just kind of more on the, I don't want to, you know, the rigidity chaos continuum. Maybe not totally in the middle. Maybe like Amy was just at our play therapy conference. Maybe they're a little bit over, but Amy was standing on the chair getting scanned for cues of danger. I have it on video, but a little on the chaotic side a little bit. Just a little bit.
You know, it's interesting. You know, I think it's really interesting that you, that Valerie asked that question. And when you think about emerging, you know, new clinicians coming into the field and selecting, you know, becoming licensed and moving, you know, moving into residency and then maybe going into play therapy, which is a different type of supervision, right? You know, most of the time they do opt in because they like kids. But now you're talking about a different kind of person. It doesn't have to be somebody that just likes kids. You know, I would love to be talking about people going into and getting RPT certified because they like to play. They like the idea of being on that continuum of, you know, maybe I don't know about the chaos continuum, but you know, they like to be in this creative mindset of, you know, being able to be creative and open and maybe it's the freeing aspect of it. And interesting. I didn't think about it that way.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a book coming out called Play is the Therapy, and really the reciprocity of play, the interactivity creates safety in the nervous system, especially for those that are traumatized. Trauma's like, you know, not what happened or what didn't happen. It's what happens in the nervous system as a result. And usually we feel very alone in that. But when we are playing, there's this capacity to be with another in safety. And the safety is what helps, or actually not even what helps, what heals the nervous system in the aftermath of trauma. So that creativity, that openness. I know sometimes we don't even actually talk about what happened. It may be in utero trauma. A lot of my clients have medical trauma, even maybe even birth medical trauma, or the trauma that comes with adoption, which is pre-verbal. They don't even remember it. So we don't have these conversations more so as we just are more nervous system focused, and the reciprocity of play really helps us to be able to connect in a way like nothing else. Because kids especially, but really all of us, we have limited access to all of our brain when we are activated. So this allows us to have full integration, you know, the right hemisphere and the left hemisphere when we're playing and we're connected to our body in the right hemisphere, and the words and the understanding and just the literal piece of it all. It connects the hemisphere and things can integrate. I think of it as like psychological digestion. And then many times the supervision will play for the supervision. So a lot of times in my supervision sessions, we do sand tray therapy, and I have them just create a tray about how, where it's going in their work now. And what are some, I mean, sometimes they can just do it non-directive, or show me some of the things that you feel like you're strong at in the sand tray and show me some things that are challenging for you right now. And then they gather some of those skills as well as the actual supervision component on a level that surpasses the limitation of words.
Beautiful. Gosh, that is beautiful. I wanted to ask, like, when supervising students, do you find, so, you know, I kind of came in kind of like Amy said, like treating kids, liking kids, and then realizing that you had to play with them. And yet I noticed that I would feel this feeling of like, but am I doing enough? You know what I mean? Because it just does, it's not prescriptive, right? And so, you know, in school, you're taught, well, you need this, a treatment plan, and you have an intervention, and you have this. And so that free play was working and it's moving clients. But do you find that students, when they come out of school or when they're just new or new clinicians in general, do you ever find that they do struggle at first with the whole concept of like, is this really what we're like, this is the therapy?
Girl, yes, especially teachers, especially people that were teachers. I was a teacher. So as a teacher, you are ingrained in, we need to do A, B, and C in play therapy. And there's many different theories that you can kind of align with. Mine is more non-directive because that's what aligns itself best with trauma healing, where the child takes the lead. When you think about trauma, the child doesn't have a choice. In non-directive play therapy or non-directive therapy in general, like Carl Rogers, for example, it's more of the client has the agency. They are the one that's choosing. So then there can be that safety of mastery and think about all of the cognitions that go along with this. Like, I have choices. I'm in control. I'm intelligent, I matter, I'm good enough. So the actual non-directive piece is so healing, but in the beginning, you betcha there's these feelings of like, am I actually getting paid for this? We've been playing Uno for like 30 minutes.
Yes, that right there, that, exactly. I guess that's why your book is going to be titled That Play Is Therapy, right?
Play is the therapy, yes.
Yes.
Yeah. In the Uno, when you think about my turn, your turn, or even just playing ball, you are with someone. Mm-hmm. How many of these people that we work with have this deep embedded felt sense of, I'm shameful. I'm not good enough to be with someone. I'm so bad that other people can't stand me. Mm-hmm. And then you have this other person that is taking your lead, is following you, and you have this reciprocity of play. There's this intonation of voice that can communicate safety and distress. There's movement, there's pauses, there's all kinds of like social engagement pieces, which is the first thing to go with trauma. Social engagement is
right. Rubbish.
So that happens a lot of times in supervision too. Sometimes in supervision, you can really get a feel for why the supervisee is stuck, because a lot of this stuff is kind of bubbling up for them that they may not even be aware of.
A parallel process starts happening. So another question, the parents. So that's something that I've seen before of like, and I'm sure you've seen that, Amy, the idea of, I'm paying for this therapy, you're just playing with my kid, you know? So how do you instruct a parent, or how do you give them brief psychoeducation, you know, to help them understand the value of that? Because by and large, I feel like a lot of those adults probably have children inside that needed play, and, you know, they're having their own attachment reactions to that.
Yes.
And to piggyback on that question, I think that's the number one thing your supervisees probably ask you how to do.
Exactly. Because, I mean, if you think about it, your parent, your child, I mean, to come to therapy is a big deal. They may have suicide ideation. They may be cutting. I mean, it's not little things like they're not eating their carrots. It's some big, big stuff. And then you bring them to therapy and they play. You think, oh no, this is a big deal. Well, and I have to say, this isn't always like this. So when I was an intern, I struggled with this. And the really key thing is to know why play is therapeutic. If you know why play is therapeutic, you know what the healing mechanism is in the nervous system, and you communicate that to the parent, and you also support the parent through parent consultation and understanding how they can incorporate play in their life, because we all need to play. Even our animals need to play, all ages. I just rode my bike real fast right before this interview, just as fast as I could. We all need to play. It's definitely healthy. But basically, this is what I tell when a person calls me, and for supervisees too, I teach them, because I knew play was therapeutic from the very beginning, but I didn't know why. And if you don't know why, it's hard to sink your teeth into teaching that this is valuable. So basically, play allows us to experience safety and distress at the same time. If you think about it, like if I'm playing basketball with Amy and, you know, we're shooting hoops, I could bump into Amy. I could even knock her down. I could even call her names. I could even laugh at her about how awful she is. Amy's like, what? I could help her up. And then we laugh it off. We've experienced safety and distress. It widens our window of tolerance. Wow. Or maybe, and that would be, you know, activation, that hyperarousal with safety. And that gives us access to that part of the nervous system. Or maybe with Val, maybe I'm playing hide and seek. And maybe Val is so very like feeling unsafe in her body. She can't be left alone. She can't even, there's some people that can't even be in a room by themselves or sleep by themselves. But all of a sudden Val's put in a position where she's hiding behind a curtain or a couch and she's able to have this distress and safety at the same time. We're widening our window of tolerance for hypoarousal. So we're widening this window of tolerance for hyper and hypoarousal, being able to experience more stress, which is resilience. So if you do that in supervision, not only do they get the skills, but they get to experience it too. And then think about like people having out of proportionate responses, like a big reaction to something that's this big. That's because their window of tolerance is smaller. So we're really helping them widen. So when I tell that to the parents, they're all in. once you describe that, they're like, yes, what can we schedule?
And I love that. So you're like working them towards the edges of the window and then widening it. That's beautiful.
Like, lift up that window. Come on, let's lift it up.
That's brilliant. I really love that. And I want to circle back to what you were saying about actually playing in the supervision experience. Yes. So I never have ever thought of doing that. And I think that that's genius.
Right. I know,
What made you think to do that?
Oh, I wish it was my idea, but there's a book on it. My idea.
Tell me more.
I can't remember the name of the book. And I've been in supervision where people have played with me. So it's kind of like in the play therapy world, it's a thing. It's several pieces come at me, but after this, I'll send the name of the book to you. I think it's called Play Therapy and Supervision or Playful Supervision, something of that nature. But
so I know I did some playing in my, I'm not an RPT, but I did some play therapy supervision. And I know we played in some of my play therapy supervision. But I think that I guess I want to speak to, so if you're not being, you know, you're not going through play therapy supervision, I still think there's room for that in non-play therapy supervision. So I guess I want to invite people who are not going through play therapy supervision, who are not becoming RPTs, to maybe bring that in, because play-based therapy is still a very, you know, very viable and valuable, you know, modality. And so I think it's a really fun opportunity. I really want to.
Yeah. I mean, it's still just, I think I like the way that you put it, because I think I've done some of it in group settings. I've definitely had some interventions there, and I do lean more towards an experiential model in a lot of ways. And so play therapy is so much of that. And, but I have not thought to do that in an individual. And so my networks are all lit up with all kinds of ideas. And so I'm super excited. Do you have a favorite, you know, one or two things that you like to like a go-to with the supervisee? I know you said something about Santray, but some other things that you just really love doing that you could share.
Well, the Santray is my main one because I use the online Santray. I love that. Another one is the thumb ball. So you put different feeling words on the ball.
Yes. Yep. We have those.
Oh, isn't it cool? Yeah. And I developed a virtual version of that during COVID. So you just kind of, I didn't know if it would work or not, but turns out people love it. I even got it published in one of Leanna Lowenstein's books, one of our favorite therapists in Canada, where you just put your thumb, you close your eyes and you speak about emotion. And then, you know, in supervision, then we talk about like, when's the time that either you've worked with someone that has experienced that emotion, maybe you felt that yourself, and we keep it linked to supervision, just so it's, you know, very much, you know, helping them in their supervision practice. I like the thumb ball. I also like the, I love using the Oaklander model. So we could practice it. It only takes like 5 minutes. Do you want to practice a little technique?
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. All day. Let's go.
Okay. So what I'd like you to do is just take a piece of paper and wad it up. Do you have paper handy?
I do. Sure.
Right behind me. And wad it up. We're going to use this paper as a medium. We're going to just wad it up just as tightly as you can. And okay. This is bilateral. So notice how we're getting that proprioceptive and pushing.
Think of my cell phone bill, I think.
That has extra meaning. Okay. Now open it up and just kind of flatten it out. Now I'd like you to just notice it's all wrinkled. It's probably softer. Is it softer than it was?
It is. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'd like you just to use it as a medium to just create something. You can tear and twist it. Like one time I made a bird, another time I made a snake. Nothing grandiose. I mean, it could be grandiose, but just make something, anything out of it. So you're making it. I'm going to do some tracking, and this is my whisper technique so that you can not be interrupted. I'm talking to the audience now. You're twisting it and turning it. You're doing some shaping. You're making it into just what you want it to be. Now, play therapy. I never name it until the person names it. You are so wonderful for doing this.
We're always up for anything.
Valse has entered the camera view.
Yes.
Ooh, and so has Amy's. Okay, who would like to go first?
I'll go.
Choices are cues of safety. Okay, so Amy, I'm curious.
Mine is a boat.
Yours is a boat. Okay. Can you describe that boat to me?
It is quite wide, and it's probably pretty deep. Uh-huh. I think maybe a whole family could fit inside it.
Okay.
And I'd like to be able to fold it a little bit more, but the edges of it are a little bit stiff.
Okay. So it's wide and it's deep. A whole family could probably fit in there. You wish you could fold it a little bit more, but the edges are stiff.
Yeah.
Can I get you just to be the boat? Just say, I am boat.
I am boat.
Hey, boat, how is it to be you?
Very sturdy.
It's sturdy to be you. What are some other words or phrases to describe you, boat?
Solid and fun to be on.
Oh, hey, Amy, does that fit you in some way? Are you sturdy and solid and fun to be on?
Sure. I think so.
Hey, Boat, what are some things that you are good at, Boat?
I think holding people.
Oh.
And having fun.
Does that fit you in some way, Amy?
I think probably yes.
Hey, Boat, what's something that's hard for you, Boat?
Well, I'm pretty unsinkable, so it's hard for me to sink. But I'm also pretty big, so it's hard for me to fit in all the places.
Ooh, does that fit you in some way? Ooh. Is it hard for you to fit in some of the places? And sometimes you fall over.
Exactly.
I couldn't resist the last part. You got to see where it's going. We'll pause there because it can go really deep.
But exactly.
We've been exploring supervision, and then we did some projection, which is a Gestalt applications of play therapy, Gestalt applications in play therapy. And naturally, the supervision aspects of you may or may not have come out. Do you feel that that applied to your supervision of holding people, being fun and playful, and also not being able to fold in all of the edges that you want to?
Mm-hmm, and then, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's hard for you to do it all because everything seems so big.
Yeah. And I could see how you could easily use that with a supervisee too.
Yeah. 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 It's amazing. It's amazing. Yeah. That's like one thing with the paper, but you can do it with so many ways. So Val, thank you, Amy.
That's super vulnerable.
Val, I'm curious about what you created.
You're like, oh, I don't know. I created a rose.
Ooh, oh, can you describe the rose?
Wow, that's gorgeous.
You like the rose, Amy.
It is layered with lots of different like movement and texture, and it's like buoyant and large, like it's a little bit extra.
A little bit
completely
extra. We're all like, that's why we love you. Just say, I am Rose. Hey, Rose, how is it to be you?
Sometimes it can be a little complex because there's a lot happening. And it's all really like powerful and exciting, but it's a lot to contain at times.
Oof.
You know, because like if you let go, it starts to come apart. So like there's a ooh, that was deep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you let go, it starts to come apart. Ooh, I felt that. Yeah. So
where'd you notice that in your body, Val? Was it in
It was like, ooh, you just hit a nerve.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what Jackie Flynn does.
Nervous. Yep.
That's Jackie Flynn's magic.
So there's many layers, and if you let go, it starts to come apart. Does that fit you in some way, Val?
Maybe.
Maybe.
100%. Yes.
Hey, Val, Rose. Hey, Rose, what's something you're good at?
Seeing things from multiple different ways.
Ooh.
And being willing to navigate whenever necessary. So even though it could start to come apart, like I could easily move something to another place and still create it or keep some semblance of the same thing moving. So I could repurpose it.
Okay. Does that fit you in some way?
It does.
Hey, Rose, what's something that you want or need?
Probably someone to water me.
Yes, which is why you need a VA.
Yes. Yes.
So we'll pause there because it can go deep as well.
Yeah.
I'm thinking we're all seeing ourselves in the rose. So I learned that through the Oaklander model. And just like any type of therapy, play therapy has very theoretical underpinnings that are really important. And knowing your theory and always staying grounded in your theory, you can always kind of intentionally veer away. But going back to your theory keeps you consistent and I think it adds to the safety of who you are because of authenticity. So once I learned the Oaklander model and synergetic play therapy, I can't go back. It's like, that's who I am. So that comes out my supervision. That's something that if you meet anybody that's been supervised by me or has consulted with me, they've done a version of that because that's the one that I go to. But another supervisor that uses play and supervision may be drawn to something else. And it doesn't necessarily make it good or bad. The big key thing is that it's authentic to the person, because that's a good safety.
So I once in a group, I don't know if you're aware that there's these little Lego people. You can order them on Amazon. And so in a group supervision, I had ordered them. They're in their individual little packs and gave everyone one, and they put it together, and then they get a series of questions to answer about their person, which is doing that projection piece. But then they swap their person, their little character, with someone else. And then on the back side of the sheet, they answer different questions, and it just shows how differently, like the perspective, like even the case conceptualization, but also the transference piece of that, and how easy it is that we project these things onto our clients, or have to be aware of that and notice that.
That's so good. That's a beautiful, like beautiful example of how play is in a way that talking wouldn't necessarily be able to get to as deep. One word of warning, though, I would say, is to be careful not to have the supervision turn into therapy.
Right.
You have to kind of know when you pause like that. Mm-hmm. Like I paused on, there's so much more to that. I pause just enough to get the supervision component of it, but not to get deep into the person's psyche, so it doesn't turn into therapy, because you know, that's a, you know, a dual role for one, and supervision's not therapy. So I think there's just this line that you have to be aware of, but it's kind of like a line. I think of it as like when you're swimming in the ocean and you get from warm water to cold water, but you don't see a line, you just feel it. That's how you just don't want it to turn into therapy.
Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. Right. And being able to be that sort of consultant / teacher / collaborator, you know, being able to be in that role of kind of playing all those parts, but you know, being aware when you are going into a counselor role and pulling back from that and saying, that sounds like something maybe you need to think about addressing with a therapist, you know, a little bit further, or, you know, that sounds like something to give some more thought to. Maybe that would be something to consider. I love being able to say, to, you know, give pause to something that, you know, and I like how you say, does that sound like something that might be something you need to think more about, or something like that. I think that's a great way of sort of holding that space, but also, and doing an activity that kind of can point out some maybe areas for growth, or, you know, areas or opportunities, and not, you know, not really necessarily saying, hey, this is something that I know that you need to work on, but also just bringing out an opportunity or a moment. Yeah,
absolutely. Because I think one big breakthrough in my work, and I share this with my supervisees, is that, and when I first started as a therapist, I heard, like, as soon as you walk into that room, you're a blank slate and be with your client. But in reality, it's the humanity that's healing. Mm-hmm. We need to bring in our humanity. We don't need to be a blank slate. We need to use our nervous system to sometimes be an external regulator or a co-regulator. And if we have our own stuff to work on, we're going to sometimes not be helpful to our clients.
Yeah.
So as the supervisees noticing, like, or supervisors with the supervisees noticing, like, ooh, I felt something there that was a big reaction, or I'm wandering around this area. Does this seem familiar to your life in any way? And then you can help them kind of work through whatever healing they need to get to be an effective supervisor, because we all have the human experience, and it's beautiful, but it's important we take care of our own stuff so that we can there be accessible to our clients in that way.
Right. Absolutely.
I will often ask mine, you know, is that yours? Is that theirs? Or is that ours? You know, looking at just the triangle, kind of like the, you know, rescuer, and like helping them to understand, you know, the role is not to be the persecutor, the rescuer, the victim. Like, it's to be the coach on the outside and to really watch. So I will often say, check the triangle. Are you in it, or are you on the outside as the observer and the coach? But then also telling them, you know, you don't have to know everything, but you need to know why you're doing what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And And that's kind of, you know, seems to be a lot of what you're saying is it's that intentionality piece and just really being mindful of knowing why it is, why you're doing what you're doing, and really having that being grounded in some theory or grounded in something that, you know, is guiding the client or the supervision process versus just, well, just felt right in the moment.
So good. Oh, I bet you're a great supervisor. That's so good.
Everybody's hey, Valerie, ask Jackie your great question about intern, about being a student.
Yes. So looking back on your own journey as a student intern, what's one piece of advice that you wish someone had shared with you about making the most of clinical supervision?
Ooh, I just got the feelings from that. Don't only get supervision when it's required. Make supervision a lifelong process.
Hooray, we're glad you said that.
Yes.
Like always be a student and always continue to learn. That's where we're going to grow. If we at some point think, okay, I know everything that I need to know, that's when we start being not helpful to our clients. That's when it's kind of dangerous. That's when we're working in isolation. Mm-hmm. And that's when we are not accessing all of the amazing resources and information that there is for us. So, you know, always get supervision long after you get your licensure and it's required.
Yeah.
We appreciate that so, so, so much. And we are just so, it's interesting how we all kind of think that once we're finished with our licensure supervision, that we can just go off and, you know, do things on our own, and that we, that our system just decides we're done. And Valerie and I are so on the band, we'll die on the hill that says we have to continue to case consult throughout our careers because it's just so critical.
Yeah.
It's really, really important.
You'll die on the hill. I'll come to y'all's funeral and I'll be like,
thank you. I mean, not to mention, I feel like, you know, we have a lot of consult groups, but I feel like some of the beauty in even just the experience of it past being licensed is the co-regulation. Like it's the basis of what we need in our nervous system. So even if I have all the answers inside of me and I'm on the right track, or Amy's on the right track and has all the answers, the co-regulation of just sharing and consulting on a case, and it just does something for you that enables you to then show up for the client in a healthier way. And so that's the part that always just stumps my brain, is I'm like, it's very counterintuitive to what a nervous system needs that we would just cut that off.
Yeah, because we're designed for connection, for safety and connection. And we work with some people that need our help. So to be able to take that on as a singular person with several people for decades,
Absolutely. That was exactly what Stephen Porges taught us last weekend, isn't it, Jackie?
Yeah, biological imperative.
Exactly, biological imperative. Jackie, as you think about your professional footprint, what you are sort of leaving in the world or doing in the world, not that you're going anywhere, thank goodness, we're glad to have you. What do you kind of define as your legacy? What are you seeing as, because we know you have the play therapy community, which is amazing, and you're doing so many great things. You talked about your book that's coming out. We want to get more information about that. What do you really see in the realm of clinical supervision and in those that you're inspiring? What do you see as your legacy going forward?
My biggest intention, like I hope when I lay my head down to die, if that's indeed how it happens, I think memento mori, like we're all going to die. So kind of think about, look, what do I want to leave in the world? My legacy is I want people to have this knowledge of what's happening in the nervous system and how we can create such safety in the nervous system that it can heal. So not to bypass or not to kind of say that all the other ones aren't as good, but I want people to really know that nervous system informed therapy overall, which play helps the nervous system, that's what offers deep healing. And through that, then we can help people on a level way beyond cortical functioning. So having nervous system play therapy, knowing that behaviors are adaptations, not necessarily intentional, and being able to help people through the reciprocity of play, heal for some big trauma. That's my legacy. So the book is called, this is a tentative name. It's due to be published in June. Play is a therapy, a polyvagal informed approach to treating or recognizing and treating chronic stress in children and adolescents. But it may not be titled that, but that's what it is at this moment. So that's my legacy, is to bring the nervous system awareness and knowledge and education. That's why Dor Henderson and I have this neuroscience of play therapy. And I get to go to Belize with Val has a training in Belize, and it's really helping people that work with all ages, adults, how to use play and therapy that helps their nervous system with regulation. Because, you know, when the nervous system isn't regulated, that's where the suffering occurs.
Yeah. And that goes to us as practice owners and supervisors. And that's where I found your work so powerful, is understanding, like, wait a minute, we're neglecting these basic things that we need. And how in the world are we going to be able to show up for the people that we're leading if we're not taking the time to go back to these basics and understand and consider our nervous system and use things like play?
Yeah, so, I think the subtitle of your book should be not be about children and adolescents, but it should be humans. What is the subtitle? The polyvagal theory. What is it?
Polyvagal informed approach to recognizing and treating chronic stress in children.
It should be chronic stress in humans.
In humans.
Forget children and adolescents. We already know about, like, it should be humans.
It does.
I think that's true. Fantastic.
And I have your other book here.
Oh, we are fantastic.
Yes. Like this isn't your first book.
No, thank you.
Jackie's first book. Jackie has so many wonderful gifts to give. She's got an incredible community, the play therapy community. She has a really super fun YouTube channel that I send all my clinicians to watch all of her videos. She is going to be in Belize in August with a group with Valerie Harris, which is going to be really exciting. She has the Neuroscience of Play Therapy Summit, which is always President's Weekend, which is going to be an amazing event. Have you announced, can I announce your keynote for February 2025? Are you allowed to say who that is going to be yet?
Yes, Lisa Dion.
Lisa Dion in February 2025 in Florida. That's going to be amazing. So many exciting things. Thank you, Jackie, for joining us today. We really are so privileged to have you. Thank you for sharing your perspectives on clinical supervision, on play therapy supervision, on the nervous system, on our own understandings of our boat and our rows and our own experiences in play therapy. And our own experiences in supervision. We really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, boat. And thank you, Rose.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning into this episode of Supervision Simplified. Remember, the revolution starts here. We hope you'll subscribe to Supervision Simplified and that you'll share it with your friends and colleagues. We also want your comments, stories, and feedback so we can be sure to be talking about what interests you most. Until next time, keep on simplifying and elevating your supervision game. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Supervision Simplified. Remember, the revolution starts here. We hope you'll subscribe and that you'll share it with your friends and colleagues. We also want your comments, stories, and feedback so we can be sure to be talking about what interests you the most. Until next time, keep on simplifying and elevating your supervision game.